Penrod's expedition left Gullabut in the middle of the morning, just as soon as the rain of the previous night had blown over and the sun broken out between the high cumulus nimbus cloud mountains. They were as lightly equipped as a tribal raiding party, each man carrying his own weapons and bedroll on the pommel of his saddle, while three pack mules brought up the rear with leather bags of provisions and cooking pots bouncing on their backs. Half a mile beyond the last buildings of the town, they came upon a group of five women sitting beside the track. They were engaged in the endless feminine pastime of hairdressing. This was the equivalent of the Agajir's sword honing, and filled their idle hours, of which there were many. It was not possible for an Arab woman to arrange her hair alone. It was a social enterprise that involved all her close companions. The styling was elaborate and might take 2 or 3 days of patient, skilled creation. In the year that Amber had lived in the harem, she had learnt the art so well that with her nimble fingers and eye for detail, her skills were much in demand among the other women of Osman Atalan's Zenana, so much so that she was able to charge a fee of 2 or 3 Maria Theresas, depending on the labour required. First, the hair had to be combed out. It was usually wiry, matted with congealed cosmetics, and twisted into tight curls from its previous dressing. Amber used a long skewer to separate the strands. After that, she employed a coarse wooden comb to bring about some order to the dense tresses. All these preliminaries might occupy a full day, which was enlivened by laughter and the exchange of juicy morsels of scandal and gossip. Once it was possible to burrow down as far as the scalp, a hunt for trespassers was conducted in which everyone participated. The sport was accompanied by cries of triumph and shrieks of delight as the scurrying vermin were hunted down and crushed between the fingernails. Once the field had been cleared, Amber dressed the locks with a concoction of oil of roses, myrrh, dust of sandalwood and powder of cloves, and cassia mixed with mutton fat. Then the most delicate part of the operation took place. The hair was twisted into hundreds of tiny tight plaits and set with a liberal application of sticky gum arabic and durra paste. This was allowed to dry until it was stiff as toffee. On the final day, each tiny plait was carefully unpicked with the long tortoiseshell skewer and allowed to stand on its own, free and proud, so the woman's head appeared twice its normal size. The finished work was usually greeted with squeals of admiration and approbation. After 10 days, the entire process was repeated, affording Amber a steady income. This morning, Amber was so intent on her work that she was not aware of the approaching band of Agajirs until they were less than 100 paces off. All present were now placed in an invidious situation. Here were 5 of the Caliph Osman Atalan's women, unveiled and unchaperoned, except by each other, about to be confronted by a war party of the same Caliph's trusted warriors. The correct and diplomatic behaviour would have been for both sides to ignore the presence of the other, and for the Agajirs to pass by as though they were as invisible as the breeze. "Captain Ballantyne!" screamed Amber, and jumped to her feet. Leaving the skewer sticking from her customer's bushy curls, she flew down the road to meet him. None of the women knew quite what to do, so they giggled and did nothing. Al-Nur, at the head of his band of horsemen, was in a similar predicament. He scowled ferociously and glanced at Penrod. Penrod ignored both him and Amber and rode on expressionlessly. Al-Nur could think of no rules to cover this situation. Al-Zahara was still a child, not a woman. She was in sight of 4 other women and 6 warriors. By no stretch of the imagination could she be in any danger of violation. In the event of any repercussions, all the others present were in equal guilt. In the last resort, he could plead with the Caliph that Abadan Rigi was the leader of the band and therefore responsible for any breach of etiquette or custom. He stared straight ahead and pretended that this was not happening. "Penrod Ballantyne, this is the first opportunity I've had to speak to you since Khartoum," Amber danced along beside Atta. "And you know very well why," Penrod spoke from the corner of his mouth. "You must go back to the other women, or we shall both be in serious trouble." "The women think you are very dashing. They would never tell on us." They were speaking English, and Penrod was sure that none of the Agajirs understood a word of it. "Then take a message to your sister. Tell Rebecca that I will seize the first opportunity to arrange your escape and bring both of you to safety. We know that you will never let us down. His expression softened. She was so pretty and winsome. How are you, Amber? How are you bearing up? I was very sick, but Rebecca and Nazira saved me. I am well now. I can see that. How is your sister? She is also well. Amber wished he would not keep harking back to Rebecca. I have a little gift for you, said Penrod. Surreptitiously, he slipped his hand into the saddlebag and found the amber necklace and earrings he had bought in the souk. He had wrapped them in a scrap of tanned sheepskin. He did not hand them to her directly, but dropped them into the road, using his horse to conceal the move from the Agajers. Wait until we have gone before you pick it up, he instructed her, and don't let the other women see you do it. He pressed his heels into Attar's flanks and rode on. Amber watched him out of sight. The eyes of the other women also followed the band of horsemen. Amber scooped up the small roll of sheepskin. She could barely contain herself until she was alone in the zenana before she opened it. When she did, she was almost overcome with delight. It is the most beautiful gift I have ever had, she showed it to Rebecca and Nazira. Do you think he really likes me, Becky? It is a very handsome gift, darling, Rebecca agreed, and I am sure he likes you very much. She chose her words carefully, as does everyone who knows you. I wish I could grow up soon. Then he would no longer treat me as a child, said Amber wistfully. Rebecca hugged her hard and felt her tears just below the surface. At times like this, the peril of their situation and her sense of responsibility towards Amber was a burden almost too heavy for her to bear. If you do to this beautiful child what you did to me, Penrod Ballantyne, she vowed silently, I shall kill you with my bare hands and dance on your grave.